It's hard not to notice the growing population of seals in our region, and that growing population is creating some tensions. By the 1960s, the gray seal population had been pretty much eliminated from our region, but with the Marine Mammal Protection Act of 1972, their numbers have steadily increased over the years. The Marine Mammal Protection Act forbids harassing or harming all marine mammals, which of course includes seals. Joining us to talk about some recent research conducted on the seal population and its impacts is Rebecca Gass, Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution Associate Scientist in the Biology Department. Good morning.
Good morning, Mindy.
And then just a couple of minutes, we're going to have Owen Nichols, Director of Marine Fisheries Research at Provincetown Center for Coastal Studies, joining us. Both are members of the newly created Northwest Atlantic Seal Research Consortium, or NASRC, right? Did I say that right?
That's correct.
So what is NASRC?
NASRC is a group of scientists and policymakers and citizens that are interested in the seal population and interactions with humans, as well as just the general ecology of the seals.
Yeah.
So how are they interacting with the environment?
Exactly. And I guess we got Owen now. Owen Nichols joining us from our East Ham studio. Good morning, Owen.
Good morning.
All right, Owen, Northwest Atlantic Seal Research Consortium. This grew out of a series of workshops that focused on concerns about fisheries and other interactions between human and seal populations. Talk a little bit about that, how this came about, and what the mandate and mission is.
Well, there are a lot of us working on different sort of more isolated but very interrelated issues, ranging from diseases and parasites to interactions with fisheries. And all of us, not only as a research community, but also as a local community, particularly here on the Cape, but certainly beyond as well, are starting to ask bigger picture questions of, you know, what do increasing numbers of seals mean in our local waters for the ecosystem as a whole, and in recognition of the fact that none of us with our own individual skill sets can answer those questions by ourselves, we thought to organize into this consortium to try to tackle some of these bigger picture issues and also try to focus our efforts more intently on some of the smaller questions at the same time.
And one of the big questions we have is just how many seals are out there. We don't really know, do we?
No. I mean, there are a limited number of surveys being done. Certainly the Northeast Fisheries Science Center out in Woods Hole, part of the NOAA, National Marine Fisheries Service, they do the best they can with their limited resources. And they have been doing surveys over the past decades when they can. For example, in 1999, they estimated right around 6,000 gray seals in the springtime around the waters of Massachusetts and up to the coast of Maine. More recently, similar surveys are showing increasing numbers. The most recent count from those data are around 16,000, again, mm-hmm. around the springtime. But still, survey effort is relatively limited across the range of the species.
There was an article in the Cape Cod Times that had some of those statistics. 1999, there were about 5,611. 2011, as you're saying, close to 16,000. 15,756 by, again, approximate numbers.
Right.
So, Beck, I want to start with some of the research you've been doing. A couple of months ago, results of a study looking at the impact on beach water quality was released. This may be a little bit surprising, the results of this, to some people.
Yes, it came about because there was a report late this summer that seals were possibly responsible for some of the beach closures that we were seeing on the Outer Cape. And I just thought about it for a little while and said, well, we have 10 years of monitoring data. They monitor once a week for the entire summer on beaches around the Cape. So why not take a look at that data to see if it indicates a trend towards decreased water quality near seal haulouts?
And so you went to, let's say you looked at, focused on 89 sites at public beaches in 6 towns.
That's correct. We focused primarily on the Lower Cape. Mm-hmm. And we did looked at the data in two ways. First of all, we looked just generally for the Lower Cape to see if there was a decline in water quality. And it's variable from year to year, but it doesn't appear to be declining. Then we went and looked at beaches that we considered near a haulout, and we considered that to be within 5 miles of a major seal haulout. And there are three on the Cape. There's one near Highhead and Truro. There is one at Jeremy Point near Wellfleet, and then there's the one down in Chatham. So we took beaches. We considered the 5 mile limit based upon some current estimates for current speeds to cause dilution or movement of the bacteria. It comes out to about 5 miles is what it might move in a day. Mm. That would also cover the inactivation of the bacteria in the water column by sunlight. So we picked out those haulouts, picked out those beach sites, and then we had the other beaches around the Cape that were then not near seal haulouts. And we compared whether there were more exceedance events at those near haulout sites versus the others. And we saw actually a better water quality at the beaches near seal haulouts compared to the ones that were away from it, which might surprise people.
That was the thing that surprised me. And I thought, wow, that's really interesting. Do we have any idea why?
Well, there are a lot of different things that cause exceedance events. And especially here on the Cape, it's quite variable. We consider it non-point source pollution, which means it's runoff, it's wildlife. Sometimes there are fecal events, but it's really hard to pinpoint what causes them. So it's quite variable. Mm. But in the areas that were actually away from seal haulouts, they tend to be more populated or closer to towns. So that could have an impact on why some of those occur.
Right. And then, as you're mentioning, there's a lot of factors that impact the beach water quality. So variable year to year. How did that factor into your research? And how do you separate what's from the seals and what's from something else?
Okay, that's a good question, because right now we can't distinguish what's from the seals and what's from something else. There are methods to what they call source track fecal contamination, but those are primarily for humans and dogs and other wildlife or other livestock. So there is nothing to detect seals. Mm. So we couldn't say that it's specifically from seals. But what we were looking at was simply an increase in the level of fecal indicator bacteria, which would suggest that there was a decrease in water quality or a problem with contamination.
Mm. Owen, your research looks at seal interactions with Cape Cod fisheries. And one of the things, I guess one of the big questions we have is, what's on the menu for the seals? What are they eating?
Well, That's also a difficult question to answer. I mean, we have, in terms of what the animals are eating, there's some scat data available and stomach content data available, and that's about what we have in terms of the existing knowledge base. But we also observe a lot of what we call depredation, which is when seals interact with a fishery in the manner in which they remove catch from a net or a hook and line. So there are those observations as well, either by the fishermen or ourselves in our research. And we see them eating a wide variety of things, some of which are represented in the scat sampling, some of which are not. So it begs the question, you know, are these animals taking advantage of the fishery and only eating these things in the fishery, or does it actually represent part of their diet when they're not able to catch something that's already been caught? When I use depredation, it actually comes from the Latin, I believe, literally means to plunder. Mm-hmm. It's a lot different than predation, which we generally use to refer to what these animals are eating out in the wild, away from fishing gear.
Right. And one of the things that the seals have learned, because they're not really stupid animals, they're pretty smart. They see you know, the fishing gear, the boats. They say, aha, there's some food there. So they've sort of, you know, gotten used to the fact that I'm going to go there because that's where the food is.
Yeah, they're quite clever. I've been doing a lot of work with the Weir fishery in Nantucket Sound, and we've been doing some sonar work and a lot of observation and seeing how the seals interact with the fishing gear to the point where we discover that they come in frequently at night, likely overlapping with when the catch actually comes in. We've also observed them essentially driving the catch out of these big fish weirs. There's some big fixed traps. So we've tried to come up with ways of keeping them out while letting the fish and squid swim into the weirs. And it's essentially akin to building a squirrel-proof bird feeder.
Oh, boy.
Technological race with the seals, because they always find another way in. But they certainly seem to be very clever animals.
Yeah. We're talking about the seal population. If you have a comment or a question, you can join our conversation at 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. You mentioned some of the information we get from the scat samples, but this can be, again, a little tricky, because sometimes you find that the seals have eaten everything but the head, and you guess you need the head for it to show up in the scat. Is that how that works? The bones?
That's correct, with most species. I mean, there are other technologies. Traditionally, most prey identification is done via hard parts. So in the case of fish, it's the otoliths, which are essentially the bones in their ears. Squid, you use beaks, and those parts are generally contained in the head. Now, you can use other diagnostic parts, for example, skate thorns, other pieces of very distinctive vertebrae and things like that. But most of what's been done to date has been done with hard parts. Now, there are other methods that involve DNA They generally are fairly expensive, and you have to have primers and things like that. So it's fairly tricky. There are other methods out there for evaluating seal diet. I'm not terribly well versed in those, but there certainly are the other technologies out there.
So this is sort of, points to the importance about this new group, this NASRC. As Becky before went on the air, you were saying, okay, I don't know so much about the fisheries end of it. I'm doing the biology here, and Owen, you're doing, your work with the fisheries, and you got other people who are doing the, scat samples. So is this group now bringing all of this together so that you can all kind of compare notes?
That's certainly part of it. It's exchanging information, it's collaborating. Funding for this work is extremely limited right now, so many of us have some of these smaller scale projects that by themselves might not answer some of these bigger questions. For example, we really don't know a whole lot about seal movements, and that affects our ability to assess abundance. There's been a lot of smaller scale tagging studies done over the years, just a few animals at a time, or maybe a rehabilitated animal that goes out with a transmitter on it. But to try to even just pool those kinds of data to answer some of the bigger questions, because we know they go from Sable Island off the coast of Nova Scotia all the way down to Cape Cod and back.
Yeah. Oh, and we've got a bad phone line with you right now. We're gonna get you on a better phone line. So, Becky, tell the same question. As you guys get together as a group, one of the things, I guess, when we're looking at Owen's Weir fishery, this information is important for, and especially getting information from the fishermen. I know you've said you've had a lot of fishermen come up to some of these meetings. That helps the scientists better understand and maybe adapt the fishing gear, the way we fish, right?
That's right. So these meetings not only include the researchers, but they include members of the public. They include the fishermen. I thought it was a really great meeting that we had 2 years ago, I believe it is now. The fishermen came and they talked to us about what they were observing with their interactions with the seals. And this is really valuable information. As Owen mentioned, we don't know a lot about the movements of seals. It's hard to get them tagged. People observing seals, if you're going to the beach every day and you notice seals with a certain marking or a tag or a brand, that information is quite valuable for us. Mm. And there's actually a web page associated with the NASRC site called Maine, where it's MAIN, that you can report having seal observed or noticed a particular seal with a marking.
Right. And of course, for the fishermen who are out on the water every day, the scientists are not.
That's right. We don't have the funding to do that, but these guys are out there working, and they collect a lot of information, so they're a very valuable resource.
We're talking about the seal population with Rebecca Gass, who's a Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution Associate Scientist in the Biology Department, and Owen Nichols, Director of Marine Fisheries Research at Provincetown Center for Coastal Studies. Both are members of the newly created Northwest Atlantic Seal Research Consortium. Our toll-free number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 866-999-4600. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. And Owen, we have you back now?
I think
okay,
so.
Okay, there you go. Okay, let's talk to Dick, who's giving us a call from Mashpee. Hi, Dick.
Hi. I guess my question is for Rebecca. As far as the fecal matter from the seals themselves, do they haul out within the intertidal zone, or is it just above the high water mark? And obviously that, if it is above a high water mark only, obviously would need a rainfall to have an impact on that fecal matter and wash it into the ecosystem. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for the call, Dick.
Thank you, Dick. That's a really good question. And it depends on where the haul out is. These can sometimes be very ephemeral. Sandbars come and go. What we noticed at High Head is that they tend to move to an offshore haul out site when people start to go to the beach. Otherwise, we find them at a small J bar that's associated with the beach. So they are actually within the swash or tidal zone there. That may change as the season goes by and people don't use the beach so much, and they may haul out then there towards the high tide line. I don't know so much about the beaches at Chatham or the beach at Jeremy Point, but I do believe that they get flooded on a fairly regular basis.
Right. Owen, are the seals hanging around year round? Does the population change?
Well, that's what I was alluding to earlier, is we don't know a whole lot about the movements of these animals. You can find gray seals in our waters throughout the year. They're kind of the core of their abundance in local waters tends to be around Nantucket Sound and the islands between Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket, and over on Monomoy. You can find gray seals around there throughout the year. They're pupping there in the wintertime. there's an event called a molt, where there's a lot of these animals at, on the beach in early spring. But you can certainly find them year-round. But how much they move back and forth between here and Sable Island and other waters around here still remains to be answered, and that certainly affects our ability to count them when they move back and forth and try to figure out what constitutes, okay, are a local population of seals versus animals that are moving back and forth.
Yeah. And I guess when you have, you know, fishing gear and stuff, they may not, some that might move on may not, right? We mentioned that we can't get a good handle on the exact number of seals, but there's been a figure thrown out there that the seal population is increasing by about 20% a year. Becky, that's a lot of seals.
Yeah, it kind of depends on the starting number too.
Yeah. It's well, you know, I mentioned this to you before we went on the air. I was birding with Vern over at Monomoy, and you know, you've heard about these numbers of seals, but it's really hard to envision it until you actually see them. And you can see when you see them, you can see why it's hard to get an exact number because they're like all mashed together. And it's, you know, I think we walked half a mile down a beach and it was just literally hundreds and hundreds of seals all compact together. They're basking in the sun.
Yeah, they pile up there next to each other. It's hard to get a good count on that. It's hard to see individuals. And yeah, you don't realize what a mass of 200 to 300 seals is like until you actually walk up to them.
Yeah, or some aerial shots. We've seen some aerial pictures too. And they're they're very, we mentioned clever, but they're also very curious.
Yeah, when we go out to sample, they're in the water. They will follow you as you walk down the beach in the water and pop up and look at you. And yeah, you'll see 20 or 30 seals just following you around.
They sort of back off a little when there's a dog on the beach.
Yeah, and then we watched a dog come down to the water one time and the seals backed away off in the water and then came forward again to watch the dogs play. So.
Right. Now, will you be following up on the research you did with as we come back to taking the beach samples? Are you going to continue with that?
Well, what we're trying to do right now is to think about doing a seal source tracking method, similar to the ones that are done for humans and dogs and birds and cows. It's not inexpensive to do, and it takes a bit of time. You have to make sure that you're picking up the organisms that you think you are, and specifically for the seals, it's not very good if it overlaps with everything else.
So. Do we have Owen back? Not yet. Okay. We mentioned, and I don't know if you know the answer to this question, that some of this research that we have can impact the way we fish and the fishing gear. Do you know if we've gotten to that stage yet? Are we just sort of at the suggestion stage, or has any of these ideas been actually put into place?
Well, Owen presented some information on the work that he's done with the weir fishermen, and I can't speak directly to what modifications they did make, but they worked very hard on doing that, and they were successful to some extent. I don't know, though, about other fishing gear. Mm-hmm. It's a bit more difficult when you're working with nets and hauling that through the water.
Yeah, so. And we've also heard, you know, both from recreational and commercial fishermen that sometimes they're, you know, they've got their catch on the line and they can, you know, before they get it out of the water, the seals are grabbing it.
Well, there's a video on YouTube that shows a seal come up onto the beach following I guess it was a striper that was being hauled in from on the beach, and he took it off the line and took it back.
Yeah, so. Be a bit frustrating, I guess, if you're the fisherman on the other end of that.
It could be.
866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. Going forward, NASSERC, you've had meetings. This has been going. How long has this group been together? Not very long.
No,
right?
It's only been together since I believe the fall.
The fall. So, yeah. But you've had meetings before this.
There were several. I think there have been three SEAL meetings, and that's on. I believe it's online at the NASSERC website, or there may be another. Yeah, mm-hmm. You could check on the NASSERC site. Right. It has the proceedings from those meetings and papers that were written up from it.
Right.
Going forward. We're discussing what ideas and, well, there's a meeting on, supposed to be a meeting on Friday to plan some, where we would like to go with research ideas and topics in the future, what our priorities will be. Yeah. As Owen said, we've pursued some of these as small projects. I mean, the beach study, that data is available publicly. It's out there. So I won't say it was easy to do. It still took some time.
You still had to put it together, yeah.
Still have to collect it all together. But that was something that you could do on weekends and things to put together. But some of the other studies that we need to do actually require a bit more planning
All right. And then we have Owen back. So Owen, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Becky about the fishing gear and fishing behavior. We talked about how this research could impact. Have we gotten to that point? Are we seeing changes in the fishing gear or how people are fishing, or are we just at the suggestion stage?
Well, I guess it depends. I mean, certainly the weir fishery, we've been actively experimenting. It's a little easier to do that there than it is in, say, the offshore gillnet fishery. But we're hoping that the kinds of information that we're working to collect in collaboration with fishermen might help reduce the amount of lost catch to the seals.
So there's certainly that potential there. You know, working with fishermen, they're very innovative. And so, you know, oftentimes we provide a lot of assistance, but the innovation and the ideas often come from them when they learn more about seal behavior from us, for example.
Right. Now, I'm sure you know there's a movement calling for an amendment to the Marine Mammal Protection Act that would allow for the dispersion of gray seals. So, and I guess there's some precedent, as NOAA did allow California sea lions to be killed that were eating an endangered species of salmon in Oregon's Columbia River. How likely is that to happen, though?
I mean, you know, I'm not an expert on marine policy, and I imagine, you know, public opinion regionally versus across the nation, you know, might differ a little bit on the matter, and it is a kind of a dynamic thing. You know, people's opinions are changing about the seals, but really, I'm not a public policy specialist. It's not an area that I could really say much authoritatively. You know, there at this point, very few known conflicts between seals and endangered species, although certainly growing up here, one could argue that fishermen are endangered species, but that's certainly not a part of the provisions of the Marine Mammal Protection Act.
And we should say, I guess, in the case of these sea lions, Becky, you told me this, that they identified specific sea lions. This wasn't just going in and wiping out sea lions because they were sea lions. These were specific sea lions.
Yeah, that's what I was told, that these were specific individuals that had been identified as causing a problem.
Right. So going forward, Owen, where are you in your research now? What are you working on?
Well, we've got a variety of projects going on, some of it small scale, some of the work in the weirs, as I alluded to earlier. We're also trying to assess the effects of depredation on fisheries over a much broader area. So right now I'm working with some collaborators both here on the Cape and up in Atlantic Canada to try to come up with a method of assessing the amount of catch loss due to seals across a series of fisheries from the Gulf of St. Lawrence down to Cape Cod, and to try to quantify what actually goes on in terms of direct interactions between seals and fisheries. Mm. So that's another example of trying to get a little bit of the bigger picture.
One of the things, that, you know, you, as we were talking about the numbers and seeing how big, and people say, oh, there's too many seals. But in fact, that really is a debatable question, I guess, because when we're looking at a species being overpopulation, you see starvation and other signs that we're not seeing with the seals. We don't really know what that max is, do we?
Well, I don't think we know what the carrying capacity is of the system with respect to seals or a lot of other animals. I mean, that's one of those sort of bigger picture ecological questions. And there are some tools with which to assess that information, but you need more diet information, more information on the abundance of seals, their predators and prey. So it's not an easy question to answer, but it's certainly an important one.
Mickey, what are your thoughts on that?
It's true. It's very difficult to answer. And but as you said, you would expect to see some of these signs of distress in the population, which we aren't seeing just yet. I mean, it's not something that we want to see necessarily, but yeah, it's difficult in many wildlife situations to know what the carrying capacity is.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you might see, we might see the sort of the numbers sort of naturally balance out?
Right. So things like disease can cause populations to decrease. We were talking a little bit earlier about the fact that you used to see skunks a lot around here, and then they had a disease pass through and suddenly the population was much smaller and you didn't see them so often anymore. So.
Yeah, we sort of have that cyclical thing with foxes
with
too.
Foxes
You'll have a large number and then mange comes in and it sort of reduces their numbers and we kind of go through this cycle periodically. And would that kind of be a normal thing when you've got an area that doesn't have the population like with the seals and then it starts building. At some point it could naturally sort of find its balance?
Right. And that is what we would expect from a natural population. And we just don't know because we haven't had one here for so long. It's taken a while for it to come back.
Yeah. I know neither of you are shark experts, but when we talked about the beach closers and you said not being because of the seals, when we have the beach closers for the sharks, it's because of the seals, right?
The seals, yeah.
And that's another thing we don't really know. We don't really know, what the population of the seals were historically here, and we don't know how many great white sharks that could have been here. That they may have been more prevalent than we are aware of.
That's true. I was forwarded a quote from Thoreau's book about, he wrote about the fact that they didn't swim in certain places because, well, there were seals there. And then there were sharks. Mm-hmm. But nobody counted them back then either.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and I know there's a lot, there's public hearings and meetings that are happening. Who are you looking for? I know we were talking about getting information from fishermen, but are there other people you are hoping to hear from as far as, getting some input into what people are seeing?
Absolutely. We're trying to do more public outreach. We actually have a public forum coming up sponsored by the Friends of Pleasant Bay, and that's going to be held in Chatham on March 23rd at the Community Center. It's co-organized by the Center for Coastal Studies and the Cape Cod Commercial Hook Fishermen's Association with a lot of input from the consortium. And so we're trying to get more public feedback and reach out to the public at that venue and hear their concerns and observations. Certainly there's so many folks here on Cape Cod and beyond that are tuned into their environment, and they're keen observers, they're naturalists. Mm-hmm. So, any information is useful.
Right. So what people like, it's kind of like we have the people walking the beaches for, the turtles and other things, birds. So they could be providing some valuable information as the fishermen are.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And would they be able to do that on their website?
Yes, at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, we've housed our consortium website, which is in a bit of a dynamic state right now as we develop it. But one of the tools there is something called the Marine Animal Identification Network, and that is a system by which you can go online and both observe sightings from other people and submit them as well.
All right, great. Owen Nichols, Director of Marine Fisheries Research at Provincetown Center for Coastal Studies. Thanks, Owen, for being with us this morning. And Rebecca,
thank you.
And Rebecca Gass, Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution Associate Scientist, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mindy.
Also, thanks to Brian Morris for production assistance in East Ham. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point airs weekdays at 9:30 a.m. and 7:30 p.m. We're also on Facebook at The Point, WCAI. Amy Vince produces The Point. Mindy Todd is executive producer. Production assistance from Jenny Junker. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.